Welcome, everybody, to Post Game Takeaways presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Tyler James in Pittsburgh. He's the one and only Eric Hansen, and we're here to share our post game takeaways from Notre Dame's 37-15 handling of Pitt. But first, let me share a word from our friends at Academy Sports and Outdoors. The most festive gear of the year is back at Academy Sports and Outdoors. Don't miss the limited edition Magellan Outdoor Christmas Market Collection only at Academy. Get exclusive 2025 gear and gifts for all your holiday parties, fun family photos, and Christmas morning traditions. Check out the entire collection from matching PJs and holiday print fishing shirts and dresses to exclusive new Mossy Oak Snowdrift camo styles and more. Shop in-store or at academy.com. If you need it fast, get same-day delivery powered by DoorDash. Let your holiday fun begin with the Magellan Outdoors Christmas Market Collection only at Academy. Eric, Notre Dame seemed to always have control of the outcome Saturday in Pittsburgh. What was your biggest takeaway from ND's eighth straight win?
My biggest takeaway, besides all the malarkey, and there was some really interesting malarkey, is how good Notre Dame's defense was in this game and how good the offensive line was. And why that's important is at the beginning of the year when Notre Dame started 0-2, a big reason why Notre Dame was 0-2 were those two facets. And Pittsburgh, to me, was a team that could let them take a retest to see how far they've come. And I thought the offensive line passed with flying colors and the defense exceeded that. I thought Notre Dame's defense was the best facet of any part of the game. And that's a mouthful when you have Jeremiah Love on the field.
Yeah, and the catches that Malachi Fields was making.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree, though. I think the defensive dominance was just downright impressive. I was in charge of our report card from the game tonight and gave an A-plus to the passing defense and an A to the run defense. And the only reason the lower score for the run defense is just because I don't think Pitt is very good at running the football. Yeah. And so they didn't get an A-plus. Pitt is good at passing. But Notre Dame held Mason Heitschel to just 126 passing yards. They had four sacks. The pick six by Tay Johnson was like, oh boy, here we go. Notre Dame's really going to be in control of this one. And Pitt's offense doesn't score its touchdown until literally the final play of the game as time expires. And maybe that drew some ire from head coach Marcus Freeman. But yeah, the way that Notre Dame's defense truly dominated from the start. And I mean, like, it's a sack. It was a sack on three of the four series to start the game. And then one pick six, it was just like, they really came out and made a statement. And I thought that went a long way in Notre Dame's performance. And we'll see what that means for playoff rankings. I know there's plenty of stuff still going on while we're recording this video that could play a role in where Notre Dame is ranked next week. But Notre Dame couldn't have asked for a much better performance, I don't think.
Right. They controlled what they could control. And let me throw out a few numbers. 15 points was the fewest Pitt scored this season. 219 yards was the fewest Pitt's amassed this season. This was a team that, despite a lot of flaws on offense, all of which were exposed today, was sixth in the country in scoring offense. They were 0-for-13 on third downs. Notre Dame had 10 quarterback hurries. That's the most they've had since 2018. At eight pass breakups, seven tackles for losses. You mentioned the four sacks. And when you look at the defensive statistics, it wasn't like somebody had 15 tackles and all four sacks. It was really spread among a lot of players. And it was really impressive that everybody you kind of rolled in there, you saw Josh Burnham early and you saw other people later on in the game that were just dominant figures. And this was the first game since the Miami game that Notre Dame's secondary has all been intact in a game. And, you know, how often are we saying, oh, Christian Gray got picked on today? I'll tell you what, Christian Gray showed up. He didn't have a lot of stats. That's because the people that he was defending didn't have many catches, if at all any catches. Right. So I think he was on blue most of the game, but you know, I might have missed when he was covering somebody else, but none of their receivers, wide receivers, had very much receiving yardage.
Yeah, their best receiving target was running back Desmond Reed, and he led them with six catches for 63 yards, and he got hurt midway through the third quarter. That, especially without him, they couldn't really get much going. They were singling him up in matchups that were favorable to him and taking advantage of things. But it was Notre Dame was able to keep him from scoring. He didn't get in the end zone. I thought pretty much every level of the defense had players making impacts throughout the game. You mentioned the secondary. I thought the safeties played particularly well. Obviously, Tay Johnson with a pick six, Adon Shuler with the big pass breakup on Pitt's first drive of the game. And then he has the sack later in the first quarter. Luke Talich was making plays in the right place at the right time a lot tonight. So a lot to like with what Notre Dame's defense was doing on every level. What did you like most about Notre Dame's offense?
I like the fact that the offensive line did its job against a pretty difficult team to do its job against. You know, 175 rushing yards, they averaged 5 yards a carry against a defense that not only was third in fewest yards per game for rushing, number one in the country in yards per carry allowed at 2.39, I think it was.
Yeah.
And that was impressive. And then just one sack allowed. And that was impressive. But, I mean, there were elements, Eli Raerden, Malachi Fields with his catches. This was the first game I felt like Malachi Fields was the guy that Mike Denbrock thought he was walking in the door, where he said, well, he said some really good things about Malachi that I probably shouldn't repeat. He looked like that tonight. And I even want to give CJ Carr a little bit of a shout out. This was, I mean, from a pass efficiency standpoint, this was out of 10 games, this was number 9. But I felt like he managed the game very well in terms of getting Notre Dame into better plays when he saw a look that he didn't like. And that when he did make the mistakes, he came right back and had an answer. And I thought that was really powerful. Mason Heinchel, I think he's going to be really, really good. But when things started snowballing the wrong way, they really started snowballing the wrong way. He didn't lose his poise, but he lost his production. I mean, it was a lot of three and outs after that point. And CJ Carr was able to stand tall and have an answer for what Pitt was doing. How about you? What'd you like?
Yeah, circling back to that offensive line in terms of like the difference between Carr and Heinchel, like Carr wasn't running for his life most of the game. Heinchel was. Carr was hurried 3 times and sacked once. There was some pressure getting to him at times, but more infrequently, certainly, than what Pitt was dealing with on its offensive end. He made a couple of bad throws, bad decisions, but yeah, he was doing a lot of that pre-snap, checking in and out of plays. It seemed like Pittsburgh was doing things in response to what he was trying to do. So it was a bit of a chess match out there on the field. So that was interesting to watch. For Notre Dame's to run for 175 yards, that was the most Pitt's given up this season. I believe West Virginia had 174 against Pitt in an overtime game earlier this year. So I thought that was good. Beyond Fields, Eli Raerden with a big day, 6 for 67 with 46 yards after catches. And then obviously Jeremiah Love sort of gets the show going with his spectacular spin move and rushing touchdown. But he had other good runs besides that. I know Pitt got both him and Jadarian Price for losses at times, but he was able to break free. I think they had 4 other runs of at least 10 yards in the game. And for him to get over the 100-yard mark against this Pitt defense is a significant accomplishment.
Amen. So what didn't you like? What do you feel like Notre Dame has to clean up?
I think you probably know where I'm going with this, but Eric Schmidt. Poor guy, missed a 46-yard field goal. Probably not the best of circumstance to throw a guy in who's yet to make his first college field goal. So we keep waiting for him to find some of that momentum as a field goal kicker. Certainly, at least has delivered on his extra points these past 2 games.
And kickoffs.
Yeah, and it's done well with kickoffs. The out of bounds issues that have creeped up a couple of times this season have not been happening when he has this bigger workload, which is important because that's not easy to necessarily balance, especially for a young guy. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It even felt like at points in the fourth quarter when the game was in hands, like, should Notre Dame just like try to attempt a field goal?
I thought so. I mean, I don't think it would have been running up the score. Because what if somebody had broken a run and it was a touchdown? This was when it was 37-9. Notre Dame had 4th and 5 on the 25, I want to say. And that's when they decided to go for it. And Malachi Fields was pretty close to the first down, but was obviously short by a yard. I thought they should have kicked a 42-yard field goal there just to get him in rhythm and give him another opportunity because – he's not probably going to have a lot of high leverage situations. You never know with Syracuse and Stanford, but probably not a lot of high leverage situations. You like to get him used to that. I guess that wouldn't have been either, but it would have been, I think, a good time to try that. But again, he didn't let it snowball into bad PATs or, you know, kickoffs out of bounds. And so, and again, you can watch the field goals. They're not short. They're just crooked. No. So they can just straighten that out. Then he'll be in a good place. But they are going to have to get that straightened out before the playoff. And I do think that Notre Dame is playing it smart by letting Noah Burnett heal. Because when we talked to the old kicker, Mitch Jeter, on our podcast, I mean, he was very good at giving us the insight into the thing that makes those injuries worse is striking the ball, that hip/groin injury. And so you really need to take the time off until that's completely healed before you try to do it again. So I do think, you know, we may see Noah Burnett in December, but I think that's the plan that it should be. And maybe Eric Schmidt by that point is reliable enough that if you're going to try a 50 plus yarder, you roll him out there and try that field goal.
Yeah, I think even moving forward, I feel like they got to find a situation for Eric Schmidt to attempt one or two field goals next week against Syracuse, even if it's late in the game or whatever. It's just let the kids see one go through, you know. It's unfortunate that he's struggled and he's been put in a tough spot, but I think they got to try to build some confidence for him. And I'm not sure exactly how else to do it other than keep letting him get some hacks at it because he's been unsuccessful so far, but obviously most of us believe he has a bright future. It's just struggling out the gate right now.
Well, it's, you know, when the fans are trying to be helpful, I had somebody DM me on Facebook and offered a kicker from Fort Wayne that they thought Notre Dame should take a look at that kicked a 53 yard or so. They're counting on me to pass that information on. So Marcus, if you're watching, there you go.
Marcus might not be looking for tips after he had to deal with Pat Narduzzi today. That could be a frustrating day.
Well, you were there in person for the drama, and I listened to Pat Narduzzi's post-game press conference, but I'm curious of what your take was, how the kind of pre-game animosity or weirdness played out today. Give us your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, first there was interesting like messaging from Notre Dame players. Like Jack Sobel was around the offensive linemen when they were getting ready to take the field, and Emil Wagner gave a speech saying in less clean words that Pittsburgh doesn't respect us. They don't respect you. Jeremiah Love said after the game that he felt a similar way. I'm not exactly sure. No one specified why exactly they felt disrespected. I think maybe you can point to the comments about maybe this game doesn't mean that much to Pitt or whatever with the must-win scenario. And I don't even know what else Pat Narduzzi may have said that could have ruffled some feathers. He's good at doing that. But then I think The fact that Narduzzi takes a timeout with, I think it was 6 seconds left, to set up a fourth down attempt, and the final play of the game, scoring as time runs out. Maybe I don't know if that was, maybe that might not have been a fourth down or not, but
it was a fourth down. It was a fourth down.
And the handshake between Marcus Freeman and Pat Narduzzi was very short. It looked like Marcus Freeman wanted nothing to do with it. And Marcus Freeman was asked about it, and I'll just quote his answer. He said, no, I wanted to celebrate. I wanted to go celebrate, but here's what I'll say. I'll answer it this way. To each their own, you know what I mean? I don't ever comment on another program, but also I don't have time to think about it. Like, they called a timeout. All right, guys, let's get them stopped, right? So he, I think, brushed over it a little bit, but I think it was pretty clear that maybe Marcus Freeman didn't appreciate that, the way the game ended. It's especially funny given Pat Narduzzi's comments about we can lose by 100 points and it doesn't matter, for them to like try to score on the very last play when this game isn't a must win. It seemed pretty ironic, but that's Pat Narduzzi for you. I actually hadn't gone through and seen what Pat Narduzzi said. Is there anything you want to add in terms of what he said about it?
Oh yeah. So one of the reporters asked him, so this wasn't a must win for you? Every game's a must win. Well, it seemed like it was more important for the people of Pittsburgh. What do you have to say to them for your performance with game day here and all this stuff? I mean, it was a little bit pointed, and he's like, well, I'd like to apologize that we didn't give them the performance that they deserved and that kind of stuff. But he was just weird in his post-game press conference. He was talking, we never quit. We even scored a touchdown at the end of the game. It's like, yeah, against the eighth string defense after you called a timeout when everybody else was heading for the locker room. Yay. I lost a lot of respect for kind of how he handled himself all week. Not that, I mean, you know, not everybody's going to rub you the right way, but he really rubbed me the wrong way. Just his whining about Notre Dame not being in the conference, which he didn't, to my knowledge, bring up this week, but he has before. It just, I don't know. It just was a weird vibe, but Marcus handled it really well because he could have really jumped in the muck with Pat Narduzzi, I thought, you know, and he definitely, you know, tried to give a little bit of a word salad so that he could escape. But it did. Yeah. It did look very frosty. Mike Singer and I, on the immediate post game show afterwards, we analyzed the handshake.
do a frame by frame breakdown of.
It looked like me when I'm at a breakfast buffet and I'm going for the veggie sausage, and somebody goes, "Wait, there's real bacon over here." I turn and go bolt another way.
Well, before we wrap up, what do you? Let's not address like what's going on in college football elsewhere, just because not everything's done. We can get to that, whether it's in our Sunday show or Monday on Football Never Sleeps. But what do you want to see from Notre Dame next week against Syracuse?
Kind of what we've seen the last 2 weeks, and that's a team that never hit cruise control, that had their foot on the gas the whole time. Played hard. I mean, didn't play well in the last when they had some of the reserves, and there were some two roughing the passer penalties and giving up the fourth down after the timeout touchdown and so forth. But other than that, I mean, when the starters were in there, man, they were really impressive. And the whole Navy game was that way. And that's what they're going to have to do against Syracuse and Stanford, because those are two teams that they're going to be bigger underdogs than Pittsburgh was. And Notre Dame really has to take care of its business, because they don't have any more marquee games. This was the last one that they have. And so people are going to be comparing Notre Dame's wins against heavy underdogs against some big games. And I think Notre Dame will make the playoff, but I think they're also fighting for seed. And you want to be a home team, and that's going to be really interesting, because when you start splitting hairs, let's just talk about the one game today, Oklahoma and Alabama.
Sure.
You know, Oklahoma may or they may not jump past Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame made that a harder decision on what to do. And then Alabama losing at home, will they drop behind Notre Dame? I don't know. You know, I don't know how I'm going to vote that yet. I have to figure that out later tonight. I really need to kind of look over everything and see what the other games are. But the thing is, Notre Dame needs to just take care of its business. And I think everything else will take care of itself.
Yeah, I agree. I think Notre Dame can't worry about everything else. And I think there's really no signs that they'll be caught up in everything. Like, getting back to like the Freeman comments about Narduzzi, like he as the leader of the program does a very good job of trying to stay above the fray. Like he's staying out of whatever you want to talk about. Like he's not into ruffling feathers or worrying about what other people think, and trying to keep his guys laser focused, and that starts with him. And so I think we'll probably see a similar performance from Notre Dame next week. They've been playing pretty well in recent years on senior days. And so guys will go out and show out probably against a Syracuse team that's really struggling. And then obviously setting up a trip to Stanford to end the season. And Stanford's just a kind of a funny team. So I think that's maybe the more precarious game of the two, but both games that Notre Dame should win comfortably if it takes care of business. And Notre Dame certainly took care of business today in Pittsburgh. We appreciate everyone watching post-game takeaways. Like I mentioned, check out the Blue and Gold staff roundtable on Sunday, Monday night. We'll be back with Football Never Sleeps, and hope everyone has a great end to the weekend.